What's up, Rust friends? It's Iridian Fierro. Welcome to our interview series where we chat with people in the wrestling community that we think that you need to know. My guest today is a producer, a fantastic podcaster, just a wonderful content creator, and he is also the co-host of Wrestle Rap. Please help me in welcoming Emilio Sparks. Emilio, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me here. It's very nice to be here. I love Chicago. I wish we could have did this in person. It's like one of my favorite cities to go to.
Oh, well, that's got to be the next one then when you go absolutely. To Chicago. Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, just thank you for joining me. I'm super excited. You and I met through wrestling Twitter, and that's kind of how our connection started. But you just do so many wonderful things, and I can't wait for the Rust Friend community to learn about you because you are just incredible. So
thank you.
For our listeners who don't know, you work in radio, which is something that we also have in common. Was the goal for you always radio, or was it just something that you stumbled upon?
It was always radio. I remember when I was 12, I had to get reconstructive surgery on my ulna and radius, and my next door neighbor gave me a boombox, and you know, I was blasting a whole bunch of hip hop CDs at the time. And then I was just playing around with the radio dial, and I found this particular radio program that I was into when I was a kid, and they were just talking, and it was just wild, and a lot of the innuendos were going over my head. It was during that whole shock jock time. In like the late 90s going into the early aughts. And I was like, you can do this and get paid and only work 4 hours. Yeah. Wait, my dad works like 8 to 12 and he comes home dirty and tired and gets up really early. I don't want to do that. I want to do this. And that's how I did it. And I don't know, I kind of carved a lane in that for a little while, I guess.
Man, and I know you and I can have like probably hour-long conversations about radio, but you really have to love it in order to stay in it, right?
Yes, it is. It is definitely to a degree a love-hate relationship because I think I probably overstayed my welcome in the relationship with radio because I had the dream of being on air. And I never had the opportunity to do that. I don't have many regrets. I don't like to live in regret. But I genuinely believe that if I was given an opportunity to do the thing in which I know I'm capable of doing, specifically sitting in a hip hop space, talking to rappers, creating dialogue of substance and playing really good music on Sirius XM, because that's the only place I ever really wanted to do radio. Yeah, I had the delusions of grandeur when New York radio had 92.3 K-Rock. And I thought, you know what? I want to do a little bit of hip hop in K-Rock. Why, you know, not really knowing at the time when you're like in high school about formats and, you know, it wasn't an open format playlist and so on and so forth. But then you would hear certain songs being played within K-Rock and you're like, all right, wait a minute. I like a little rock music. I can do this. Let's do it. Yeah. But hip hop was always my love. And Sirius XM, specifically like Shade 45, was always one of the places that I wanted to be. To me, it was just there was a freedom and a creativity to express on satellite radio that wasn't allotted on terrestrial. And it still is to a degree.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I did a 10-year bid at Sirius. I was all up in Shade 45. I was producing a ton of shows or a board op, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And my glass ceiling was there. And that was it. I knew the writing was on the wall. I wasn't seen as anything else. I love the institution in which I worked for a decade long because it prepared me for all the things in which I started to do later on in my career. But I was never really given the opportunity to do the thing that I really wanted to do, which was talk a whole bunch of smack and play a lot of cool records. It's funny because I did a college radio show.
Yeah.
And it was pretty popular, right? And I would have rappers that I had come up there. Guys like Big Crit, Smoke Dizza, like just real popular blog rappers of the time who started to blow up Currency, Wiz Khalifa, right? They were all on my college radio show. Then they would get up to Sirius. They and their people would be like, yo, why aren't you doing an interview with us up here? Yeah. And I'm just like, Kanye shrug. I don't know, you know? Yeah. And that was it. So it was there. I pitched a wrestling hip hop thing, the early predecessor for what Wrestle Rap would become. And they didn't get it at the time. It wasn't, I guess it wasn't urban enough. I don't know, you know, but I was told, oh, that ain't going to work, blood. Ain't nobody going to listen to two grown folk talk about pro wrestling and have a rapper talk about pro wrestling and then play music with it and come up and do every couple of breaks for an hour. Ain't nobody going to listen to that.
It's crazy cool, you man. Say that, right? Because I feel like sometimes in the industry, specifically radio, like you have to know, like, all right, even if I don't get to what I am, like that doesn't mean that I wasn't successful in what I did, right?
I would have to really sit and analyze. I don't think what I did was reinventing a wheel. I don't think what I did or the shows in which I was a board operator on, like they can give you the fancy term in studio producer. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you're just a board op to make sure that the chaos doesn't ensue and you keep the place running so you don't get the dead air.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I was doing anything or anything that was detrimental to the talent. I just know my personality and it's very big and it's very open to saying, hey, all right, this is cool, but why don't we try doing this type of segment? Yeah. Or, hey, let's take some phones at this time because I've noticed there's a groundswell of calls around this time every single day. So let's answer the phones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or this record's dope, but let's play this one. I just found this. I think this is cool. You tell me what you think via email. And then it would be like, great, let's play it tonight. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like things like that. But to actually get producer money, no, I wasn't making producer money. I was making minimum wage. I was getting paid every 2 weeks. So it was just like,
it was what it was.
And I knew my ceiling.
Yeah.
And ironically, I had to leave and make a splash somewhere else to get to do the thing that I wanted to do at Sirius WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
So, crazy, right?
Yeah, it's all such a journey. It's all so crazy. I know your uncle got you into wrestling and that he would give you like wrestling magazines and you would watch tape with him. Was the rest of your family as supportive in your love of wrestling at that young age? Or were they kind of like, you know what? We don't think that you should be watching this.
Oh, no. I grew up in the, I was a kid. I was a baby of the 80s and the child of the 90s. As long as we didn't kill each other, my mother didn't care. Whatever kept us quiet, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just like, and this is at the time too. I'm 4 years old getting DDT'd by my 12-year-old uncle, you know? And I'm just like, again, you know? Yeah. So it was amazing to me. And then you fast forward, you get a little older and everybody's doing crotch chops and two sweets and you're seeing, you know, puppies on TV and, you know, scantily clad whoever's at that point is just, you know, like, what is this is wrestling? And my parents didn't care. My dad would sit and watch with us, you know, for a little while before he passed out on the recliner. There was no, like, whatever. My father's favorite wrestlers were Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko, you know? So it was just like, he would watch a little WCW, would pass out. And then by the time Raw was on, it was a completely different show. My mom would pop her head in the living room and be like, oh, whatever. She goes, just turn it down. It's too loud.
Mm, yeah.
And that would be it. She didn't care. We wanted to meet Bret Hart's and Stone Cold Steve Austin's and Sable's when they would come to Staten Island and do autograph signings. They brought us. They showed us it. It was never like, you know, this is fake, right? Like we knew.
Yeah.
But, you know, they never had that conversation with us. Yeah. I guess it was just let them come to their own devices to find out for themselves.
Yeah. My dad is exactly like that. He still passes out watching wrestling to this day. He'll watch like the first two matches and he's out. He's like,
he don't care. Like, like my dad's like, oh, this is great. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
Yeah. For me, it was my mom that kind of had a tougher time. I was watching it like early in the 2000s and she's like, no, bedtime. Monday Night Raw, it goes till 10, not happening. You have school the next day, not working out. It was pretty rough. And I'm like, Mom, like you, the main event. I have to at least watch the main event. Come on, there's no way. You can't let me watch this. So I'm still convincing her to this day, right? Because she's just not about the blood. Now that we're having blood and guts matches, now that GCW's on, you know, she's just not for it. So I'm going to need convincing on her side for that.
Yeah, I could see that. I think as I'm not a parent, so I don't know, you know, I think if you look at the two different top promotions within the United States, it's two very different ideologies. And in those ideologies, you just have to figure out which one would you prefer your child watching. And it depends on the age and the demographic and range and so on and so forth. To me, every kid now knows of John Cena. So, you know, you got to let him watch WWE.
You can't mention John Cena. I literally, this guy goes with me everywhere. Absolutely.
That's cool. But that's the world in which WWE has set themselves up for, where, you could see some really cool wrestling, like a Gunther versus whoever, and you know you're going to get the wrestling of the wrestling. But at the end of the day, they're still an entertainment-based company, so you know you're going to get some things that appeal to a wider audience, where AEW might not necessarily want, they might want to appeal to a wider audience, and you could see that they're trying. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they know that their demographic is a lot older, and they know what they want to appeal to. Yes, you have children painting their faces like Darby Allin, which is incredibly cool. And you have a lot of kids dressing up like Orange Cassidy, which is super cool. But at the end of the day, you're seeing adults our age going there. You know what I mean? I'm not bedazzling t-shirts to go to a wrestling event.
But not yet.
I'll save that for you. You can bedazzle me up and I'll wear some.
Okay. So
maybe for Wale Mania, that could be my t-shirt.
There's a time and place for everything, right? I feel like that would be the most appropriate place. We are going to talk about Wale Mania and also my experience there, but not right now.
Good.
Let's talk about Russell Rapp, because it is just, it's so great. And podcasting is its own world, right? You know, just like radio, we're trying to make those connections and tell those stories to our listeners. But what made you want to start a podcast that really connected those two things that you loved?
It was me and a buddy. It was me and Kazim Famuide. And Russell Rapp originally started between Kazim and a partner of his at the time when they were both working at The Source magazine. His name is Ernest Estimate. And Kaz and Ernest were at, I forget which WrestleMania weekend it was. I think it was maybe in Atlanta. And they started the hashtag Russell Rapp. And it just started as a hashtag. And then Kaz was like, let's bring in a couple of, this is before content creators and influencers actually had a title. So I was one of those guys to become it. And then, you know, Kaz and I were just like, there is no podcast talking about what we're speaking on in the group chats and in person. Why don't we just, you know, do it together? And I'm like, it's a great idea. I was already doing a podcast already. I was doing something else. I was doing a podcast called The Emilio Sparks Experience, where I was interviewing wrestlers, but I was also interviewing rappers and random other individuals. So I was just like, it was a weekly talk show, you know? And I was like, I would like to talk wrestling on a weekly basis. And we figured out what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it and what the mechanics of it was supposed to be. And, you know, Kaz was a part of it. Then he got his job with WWE. I was like, go forth, young man, and be great. And then I had to figure out what type of host did I want to be. Because I didn't have a co-host now. I didn't have one of my best friends doing it with, where the fun of it was just us clowning around and trying to make each other laugh while trying to give really eloquent and thought-provoking hot takes without being so vicious in how it is now, you know, what you see on social media. We always knew that. I always came from the arc of, and this is what I would tell my talent when I would start working for WWE, when I was producing the podcast network there, heart and tone, and let's do it with love and kindness and not come from a place of venom. Even if there are certain limitations on certain things we cannot do, let's work around that, but never have venom with anything. And that was the thing that, you know, Kaz and I did early on. It was just always fun. And then Kaz gets his job at WWE. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I think a one-person stream of consciousness for a little while could be the thing. And it was. And I turned it into an interview show. And I was starting to interview more wrestlers. I was interviewing content creators. Again, because it wasn't really a term then. And I started doing that. And I started having guest hosts come in and just kick it with me. And then I get my job at WWE. So I ask a buddy of mine, hey, listen, I want you to come on. I'll pop in from time to time, but here is our guest list. This is our core. I can do one a month with you. Yeah. Can't do weekly. But here is our network of folks. This is my family. It's my WrestleRap familia. This is my community. It's a community we built. Go forth. And it was Mighty Vin. Yeah. And then, you know, my time with WWE came and went. And I'm like, all right, daddy's home. Let's rock and roll again. And we've been doing it ever since together. And you know, the show changes. Mm-hmm. It always does. You know it. You're in the radio business. You're in the podcasting space. I personally don't like anything over 35, 40 minutes in regards to a podcast. I can't do 2-3 hours of anything. So I don't even want to do 60 minutes of anything. So if you listen to an episode of WrestleRap, mm-hmm. it's maybe on a short day, you're getting like 26 minutes.
Yeah.
But in that 26 minutes, you're getting everything that you need to know. And I'm speaking action body wear. Mm. You're not just getting fluff. You're not getting filler words and going back to, oh, but I said this and my point is this. You know, you're getting real concise, immaculate speech. And what I mean by immaculate speech is just you being direct. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Four Agreements, but chapter one is immaculate speech. So I always try to use immaculate speech in anything that I do. But I think when it comes to the thing in which we do, because it's so under a microscope, under a small bubble, you have to be real on the nose in regards to what you want to say and how to say it, because there isn't a subtext. Everybody will take it, think they're an expert with it, and try to clap on you so they can cap on the thing in which they like in order to get the engagement farming in which they can use to propel themselves, yeah. whether or not they do anything within the space.
Yeah.
That was always something that we were real consistent about, like making sure that we do. And I think Vin's super talented. One of the best. Vin did college radio. Vin's a radio guy as well. He has a marketing background as well. So it's just some of those things that we did. And if you listen to the episodes, and please, I invite anybody, please come and hang out and listen to them. It's a different type of show. That's for sure. We're really not in the weeds about reviewing things weekly. We speak to what we like. We don't need to clap on anything we don't like, because there's a whole sea of people out there that do that already. So God bless you. Go do that. If you like, just want to hear two idiots talk, come hang out with us.
You know, there is a moment in wrestling where you kind of see behind the curtain, right? It's sort of the moment of no return, I call it, where you didn't know about contracts. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I know about contracts. I know who's a free agent. I know who's coming here. Do you remember when that moment was for you? Like, I know for me, it was like in my teen years. And it sucked that, you know, you can't go back to the wholesome surprises and now you kind of know who might debut where. Do you remember when that kind of happened for you and like what you felt?
Oh, you mean the innocence lost when you find out that Santa Claus isn't real?
Yes, absolutely.
And you lose that like mm-hmm. innocence to the point where you just want to sit and you don't care about what goes on. Oh God, it was, I started really knowing where the bodies were buried to a degree, you know, it was early on, I could tell you that. It was right out of college. I knew about contracts and things of that nature, but to be real in the weeds with it, to really, really know stuff and not say anything mm-hmm. because you don't want to devalutize your friendship with certain people that are telling you information because they trust you, mm-hmm. it was right around my early 20s. And then in my late 20s, it got crazier. Where I was just, where I knew a lot. And I had conversations with higher ups where I worked at the time. And they were like, damn, you know more than some of us when it comes down the line. And I go, because they said it, they go, you know where the bodies are buried, huh? I go, I knew where they were buried before I even stepped foot in this joint. Mm. So it was just like one of those things. But I try not to look at it like that. You know, I don't care about who pops a demo rating. I don't care what segment outdid this. I don't care how long somebody's supposed to be a world champion for, because it's all by design in the company in which we're watching. Exactly. So to me, I don't care. You know what I mean? I still get updates about finishes and things like that. And I'm like, ah, this is cool. Great. I appreciate the heads up. Yeah. But I'm not going to say that on social media. Yeah. So now if I want to watch, okay, now since I do know it, how do I have the surprise and the shock or the bewilderment? Well, I look at something different in it. How do you get to the finish now? Hmm. Great. How do we do that? You know? The one time I was surprised, though, was my best friend winning the Money in the Bank.
Okay. They kept the secret.
Someone kept the secret. And I was thoroughly surprised by that. Because I guess they knew that they didn't want to spoil it for me that he was going to win.
That's so considerate. See, so that's a moment of sunshine in such a cloudy space.
Yeah, one of my many sources were like, do you want to know? Do you want to know? Do you want to know? And I'm like, no, what? They go, we can tell you the finish. I was like, nah, I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out, you know, he wins. And I'm like, now let's set it up. You're in Dallas, Texas. I'm with my cousin, who's my absolute best friend. I'm with my cousin's wife. Mm-hmm. My cousin's not a small man. He's in very good shape. Built like a solid oak tree. Yeah. I'm no small man either. He wins. He goes up. He climbs up. We jump on our seats and we're just going crazy. It's to the point where the entire section just looked at us and started jumping on their seats as well once we did it. And me and Brum made eye contact when he won. And I'm just like, yes. Like I'm like, my arms are flailing. I'm screaming expletives. And we're just like, I grab my cousin by like their head and he grabs me and we just go, ah! And then we, you know, it was like, all right, great. You know, but yeah, no, that's the type of stuff. It's I thought that was really cool.
Let's talk about you working not only your podcast, but you've helped so many other people with their podcasts. I love Renee Paquette, right?
So do I.
And
so do I.
You working
big fan.
You said I love her, right? So you working on her podcast? Talk to me about how that came about. And I know you just didn't work for hers, so. How was that situation? Like, do you know everyone backstage? What's happening here, Emilio?
I kind of was like, so when I started at WWE, mm-hmm. I pretty much had a good grounding of who I knew there. Mm-hmm. I knew not a lot of, like, the roster is very big, but I knew my people. You know what I mean? Like the people that I really had fortified relationships with. Renee was not one of them at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember walking, so I get hired on a Tuesday, Thursday, I'm on a plane to Toronto and it's SummerSlam weekend. I'm in my suit. I'm with my boss and the director of the podcast network. Mm. And like, I think my boss, he knew that I knew people, but I didn't think he knew how well received I was going to be.
Yeah.
And the first person that I seen was Claudio Castagnoli. Mm-hmm. I know Claudio from Ring of Honor days, and Claudio a couple of times slept on my couch when he was in ROH. Yeah. So when he saw me, he ran over to me and gave me this biggest hug and was carrying me around, introducing me to people. Then he put me down and he had to go do his own thing. And the next two dudes that I run into now, this is my bosses are watching this whole thing take place, and they're just observing. And the next two people I see are Adam Cole and Roderick Strong. Big hugs again, jumping up and down, like, congratulations. That I knew Roddy and Adam from Sirius and so on and so forth. And then it was over and over. It was just the same people. But also too, you gotta remember too, we did Wally Manias.
Yeah.
So, you know, these wrestlers would hit us up and be like, yo, we want to come. I got you. Plus one, plus two, whatever. So it was things like that. And they just looked at me like, hey, you're interesting. And then you fast forward. Now I'm on the road and it's months and months and months go by. And now I'm really starting to build rapport. And, you know, you're trying to figure out, okay, we have to have a slate of shows. And what do you think? Who do you want to do? And okay, New Day, Corey Graves. I got to meet Graves and became very close friends with Graves after that. I knew Graves because of social media. He was a social media buddy, but then we actually put faces to the names and we hung out, have a lot of commonalities. Him, his wife, love them both. I think they're so cool. And one day over in catering, one day over cookies, I meet Renee Jane Paquette. And we're talking and she introduces herself and it was real quick. It was brief. And I remember one day I'm sitting in the back because I used to like to edit right then and there, get it all done, write up my notes, so on and so forth. So I'm in the back and I think I'm just like sitting on like a crate and I'm watching her. I got my headphones on and I'm watching her conduct an interview. And I'm like, man, this woman sparkles, but not sparkles in a way that it's about like looks. Yeah. It was just in the way of like talent and the way she carried herself and what her demeanor was. I think she's a total class act. I just think she's a very, very special individual. I think she's super talented in everything that she does. And I didn't say nothing. I was like, all right. And then I pitched Renee from that day forward. And then I would, you know, she sent me an email about what she wanted to do and it just never came to be. And then I left and I was telling her I was leaving because at this point we were becoming really cool. We would always talk. I was like, you know, wherever life takes me, I appreciate you. And wherever life takes you, I genuinely feel one day we will work together. Continue slaying, queen. And I'll see you when I see you. A year later. Maybe it wasn't a year later. It was a little while, but it wasn't. It was like quick too. I got a text message from my buddy. Hey, you ready to work together? I was like, absolutely. Because I left WWE and then a pandemic hits. I got no job. I have no prospects of finding a job. I got no money coming in. And I'm like, ugh, what am I doing? You know, and then there was a lot of like internal strife to the point where there was like some imposter syndrome and there was a lot of depression. There was a lot of regret. I was swimming in a whole bunch of feels that I did not know how to navigate. And I will, and I've told her this, I've told John this, she saved me to a degree. Like she pulled me out of this like funk that I was really in at that point because I did not know the course of my life. And for the first time in a long time, I did not know where I was going or what I was doing. But I knew where I wanted to be and where maybe I should have stayed, but that option is no longer there.
Yeah.
So now I got to rebuild. And in that rebuilding, I got to be bigger, faster, stronger in everything that I do because I can't let the thing that I just did define my work for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And the sessions was born.
And it's great. It was fantastic. Like
it was honestly already in my one of my favorite things to ever create or help create and work on. It was just I can get choked up just thinking about her and doing it because like I remember the place in which I was in and she said, you're my dog, you're coming with me wherever we go. If we sign a deal, you're my guy. True to her word, she was. And then we did 326 episodes together.
That's incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Oh my goodness. And I know that you like to tell stories. You know, you had mentioned ones with heart, with a lot of tone. And I think that that absolutely connects with the recent video that you put out on YouTube with Big E, right?
Yeah.
When I saw that trailer on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now, I'm still going to say Twitter. It was so cinematic. It was like I was watching a trailer for the hottest movie that was coming out this summer, which was you and Big E just doing yoga. So talk to me about you and Big E doing yoga together. It was an intense experience, right?
Yeah, it was. So I had this idea. So I always, when you're in charge of other individuals' visions, sometimes you have to lose sight of the thing in which you want to do. Now, to a degree, I was always paid to be Emilio Sparks.
Yeah.
But to be Emilio Sparks, I never really got paid to be.
Yeah.
You know? So I was more looked upon as, and I am, I'm a producer, I'm a creative consultant. I'm a pretty creative guy and I will pitch my stuff. And when I was working with Gallows and Anderson, I was producing, and Rocky Romero, I was producing Talk and Shop, their podcast. And I don't know, one day I'm in the shower and I'm thinking, okay, you have nothing to do now. You got no shows right now.
Yeah.
You know, you ain't working on nothing. What are you into? Because on social media, if you look, the real ones or the really good ones know how to craft the four pillars of what they want to highlight. Mm. So I know for me, one of my four is mindfulness and like that fitness space. Mm-hmm. And that goes into like yoga, weightlifting, meditation, breath work, the whole nine. And I remember I'm washing my hair. I'm like, I want to just do yoga with sweaty wrestler.
Not the epiphany and in the shower.
It was the epiphany in the shower. The first three that came to my mind to do this, Big E, Effie, Ricky Starks, and MJF. I know three out of the four. So I know, I think, God willing, they'll bite on this.
Yeah.
The fourth, I don't know. So I'm like, got to show and prove first. So I speak to my number one, my bestie, and she's like, do it. And then I had this, then the imposter syndrome sets in. And now like starting like that takes the seed takes and it starts to spread the roots. And you're like, ain't nobody going to watch you do this, big dog. People just know you as a producer. This ain't going to be a thing. What you talking about?
Yeah.
Yoga? Ain't nobody who's watching you do yoga. You know what I'm saying? I talked to Renee and I'm like, how's this for an idea? Yeah. Run with it. Do it. You're so talented. Stop being behind the scenes. Get your face out there. Go. Yeah. I'm like, all right. I reach out to Bruh. And Bruh's like, I'm in. I explain the whole thing where I'm like, listen, I think to create a community of like-minded individuals, men and women who don't really open up and talk about their stuff. I go, I think this is real pertinent right now within the world in which we live because it's a lot of heaviness. And I know I got a lot of heaviness on my chest. And I want to show more vulnerability because I know at times already and I can be very intense and very, not aggressive, but assertive in my speech, my demeanor, the way I walk into a room. I'm very self-aware of that. Sometimes it's by design, but sometimes it's not. But I also know at the same time, I could be rather emotional. I could wear my heart on my sleeve for the people and just instances that I love. So how do I find the beautiful balance for that? How do I show vulnerability? Well, it's through your yoga mat. And to me, yoga was always a science and a philosophy over anything else. You can do the poses. You could sit in those. You could do those all day. But it's being present and having an intentionality to do that. And when I was having my conversation with Big E about this, we were on FaceTime for like 2 hours. And I sold him within the first 5 minutes. But we just continued to talk and talk and talk and talk about why this would work. And we always say we love each other. When we got off the phone, I was hyped. He was coming in a week or two later. So I had to find my guys, my camera crew, my photographer. So big shout outs to Jabari Bates and Phil Siciliano. And it was off to the ground and running. And I think I tormented Jabari to the point where there was about 9 different versions of this video before we even did it. And there was a lot of people that I sought counsel with because for the first time now, the emphasis is going to be on me. And I was like, oh, I got to take this and do it. You know, my old stuff that I used to do was real flip cam journalism back in the hip hop blog era where, all right, cool. I'm going to interview him and ask you 5 questions. I'm going to say some dumb stuff. Let's get on go.
Yeah.
But this was like real because I found my voice. I found my passion. I found the thing in which I want to do. And now I have all this time and I'm like, I want to show that now. I want to highlight something in a completely different context than what my contemporaries and peers and people that I respect within the creative space in the world of professional wrestling are doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that was it. Now I don't know. I have a few other ideas that I want to do within my YouTube channel that are not really yoga based. Mm-hmm. Because I know it takes a certain type of individual to want to do that and to be that vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I would love to do that with everybody. But I know not everybody is as open or willing to receive that type of emotional breakthrough. So I just fall back. And when it comes in, it comes in. And I've gotten a lot of requests from a lot of wrestlers who want to do it.
That's
awesome. And to me, that makes me feel really proud because I was doubting myself.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want, even when I was posting the video, I'm like, and just like, it's easy to post photos on social media and like a whole bunch of people view it and it gets an engaging post. That's one thing because they're really nice photos, right? But then to actually sit and watch a thing, are you really going to do it? It's like, does it get taken seriously? Because sometimes it's still a taboo thing. Oh, what is yoga? Oh, mindfulness. Those are just buzzwords now that we use just to propel forward in regards to just likes and clicks.
Yeah.
And, you know, my yoga teacher always said something that I appreciate. Yoga isn't meant for Instagram. Yoga is not supposed to be pretty. You got to embrace your wobbles. So go embrace your wobbles. I said that as I'm uploading the video and then I hit send and
there it was.
There it was.
You know, watching that video, I thought it was so great that you made it because, you know, when you and E are standing right outside, I think like one of the first things that you say to him is like, are you ready to open up your heart? And that's just so important because like in the community and wrestling community, and I guess just in general, I feel like, you know, people aren't vulnerable and it's tough, right? To speak about mental health and to speak about all the problems that, you know, people have. And in a way, you know, we're kind of taught to internalize that and to not really express ourselves and to not go to therapy because why would you tell somebody else your problems, right? Like that doesn't make sense in, you know, to a lot of people. But the way that you guys are talking while you're doing yoga, and I know your instructor had mentioned like the journey is different for everyone, but like the destination is the same. And that's just so important because I feel like in the community, there's needs to be a little bit more openness and a little bit more safe spaces. And I feel like this video is kind of making that safe space and starting a conversation.
I wanted it to be a warm blanket. Mm. Like I wanted it to be Linus's blanket.
Yeah.
You know, anytime anybody steps into that space with me, with my yoga instructor or my breathwork instructor, whoever, I want them to feel a sense of calm and just safe energy. Because there's a lot of times in this world where we don't feel safe. And there's a lot of times where we lose our patience and we lose our way. And there's a lot of times where we get real heady and we internalize everything.
Yeah.
The funny thing about therapy and all of that was when I left WWE, my depression got really bad. And then it was tenfold during the pandemic and the lockdown. I started seeing a therapist, but I was having the conversation about wanting to go with Brody and E because we were in a group chat together and they were encouraging, yo, you got to go. I know you're not, it's just, you're not the same dude. Like go and figure it out. And with that, I started to do it. And that's, you know, you start to think. And now you have all these tools in your mental toolbox to really change how you think and reprogram why you think. You know, now when I'm still going, there's some stuff I'm going through even now where I have to give it the time and attention it needs. I also have to give it the space in which to be a thing and to whether or not flip out by myself or whatever, like have a minute, you know, because even Gandhi flipped his shit. Let's be real. You know, like there's even a story in the Bible where Jesus flipped over a table and, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, so I'm like, all right. If these teachers of peace flip their shit, mm-hmm. then I know I'm going to flip my shit sometimes too. Okay. So let me not be so tightly wound to always try to be composed and zen-like. There's a difference in responding to a situation and reacting to a situation. Mm. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it the time and attention it needs and the energy in which it needs. But then once that passes, I got to cut this thing loose. And that's how I'm trying to walk into every single space that I feel where something starts to come up. And I have to hold myself accountable. And then I have to set the intention to let it go and then to work on and know when a feeling or a thought starts to come up inside of me first. Yeah. And that's what like therapy and meditation and prayer has really done for me.
Yeah. And all of those things are so important. It's just such a self-awareness and just even realizing that like, oh, okay, like I, you know, feel this way. I know why. Like that is such a big step, right? And definitely, I feel like people should do more meditation, more self-care. That's such a big thing, right?
Well, it was because a lot of us suffer in silence. Mm. And I know that I was one of those because I didn't want to dump my problems on anybody else. Yeah. So I'm like, do I really want to open up to these two dudes that I'm very close with and tell them how I feel about a specific instance in my life or what's going on? And then they shared some stories and it was just like, okay, go heal.
Yeah.
And it's been a journey. It's been a journey. But again, it's about that video and hopefully a set of videos is about a community to watch and speak with and interact with. If somebody's feeling a type of way, hey, Sparks, I just seen your video. Wow, man. Like, I'm going through something too. Yeah. We in it together. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're in it together. So just, you know, stick your chest out hard and just continue to walk your path and breathe, baby boy or baby girl, because you got this.
Yeah. So. Words of motivation from Emilio Sparks himself. Let's talk about Wally Mania, right? So WrestleMania season is almost upon us, which means that Wally Mania season is also upon us. And I got a chance to experience Wally Mania for myself. And let me tell you, rest friends, whoever has never been to Wally Mania, I feel like I was in the Twilight Zone. There was so many things happening. And, you know, there's music playing, you're up on stage, you're hyping the crowd up. And then all of a sudden, like Rob Van Dam is walking next to me. And then the Good Brothers are getting a drink at the bar right next to me. I'm like, what is happening? So talk to our listeners about what Wally Mania is and the role that you play.
As me and Kaz like to call ourselves, we're co-curators. We're the plugs.
Yeah.
You know, it's Wally's mastermind. It started off at like a little just chill spot, just eating some food, just friends watching wrestling together. And then it became what you see to the point where now it's a full blown stage show and it's a full blown party. It's the premier event outside of WrestleMania itself. That is a 2-night star studded event, but Wally Mania is the kickoff every year. And I'm getting text messages now from individuals. Yo, I'm in. All we did was say we picked a venue. Mm. So we did. We didn't plan anything else out yet. Yes, there's some graphic designs and all that stuff is done. But we haven't like went through our guest list yet, or we haven't picked our people of honor and things of that nature, or what we even want to do. You know, so. It is a tedious, many month long process to plan out. And it does start earlier and earlier every year. It's like the Christmas season. But after the Royal Rumble, the day after it starts.
That's crazy.
And it doesn't stop until the final like hours before Wally says goodnight.
And that's crazy because even I feel like during the event, you know, there's so many things that could happen, right? And you as a curator, you got to be like, all right, we didn't plan for this, but now we're adjusting. And I feel like you guys have been able to adjust on the fly, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, but again, that comes from the pedigree of who Wale is as well. Mm. You know, expect the unexpected. Let's just have fun and let's do something for the culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll adapt. Even if we got to call an audible, brothers, Wale is great. You know, he's fantastic. And, you know, he really spearheads the event, you know, because we wouldn't have it without him. You know what I'm saying? Wale's put a lot of people on and his main goal always at the end of the night is to make sure that people go home happy. Mm. And that's it. That's what he wants. And you're damn near getting almost 90 minutes of a performance with Wale and friends and everybody pulls up. And, you know, he's had a slew of top 10 artists come in and perform their songs. Philly's going to be no different.
I'm telling you, when I was there with my bestie, Lo, and literally...
Which one did you go to?
I went to Dallas.
Well, that was a good one. That was an away game, too. I remember, like, so we're doing the walkthrough.
Yeah.
And Wale comes in. I'll never forget what he's wearing because he's always a stylish dude, very handsome. Comes in, not a hair out of place. He's wearing a red Balenciaga fleece zip hoodie. Beautiful, like, $3,000 jeans and, like, these really crazy sneakers. Wale knows how to dress. He's, like, even when Wale is in sweatpants, Wale is crushing it.
Yeah.
And I remember he comes in, he does a sound check, tells me and Kaz, all right, guys, this is the away game. Next year in LA, that's the home game. Let's bring it tonight so we can do it. For next year and apply pressure.
Yeah.
And we did. And we had the Street Profits as our guest that year. And we had a ton of surprises. Rob Van Dam happened spur of the moment, you know. He was with the dudes from Collar and Elbow Brand. They text me.
Yeah.
Rob seeing this on Twitter. He wants to come through. Okay.
Yeah.
Come through. So he came through and he did it. And we're like the people at the event are like
insane. When I tell you the crowd was losing their mind, they
and,
were
you know, his wife was twerking that thing, and the crowd was just really into it. And that was it. You know, we had the moment of moments. We always like to have Wale Mania moments, and the Wale Mania moment that year in Dallas was Samoa Joe coming out to public service announcement and commanding and owning the stage.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's things like that, you know, like last year, the moment was the Bloodline. Yeah. And then the thing, we had this really great interaction because we wanted to celebrate Big E and we wanted to celebrate Trinity. And we had this really great moment where E comes out, we surprise E, we play this video and everybody thought that that was it. While the video is playing, I run into the green room. And I tell the Usos, yo, y'all got to come out. They come out and they had this whole incredible interaction where they're telling stories, trying to pop each other. And then they hug and they say that they love each other because Xavier Woods was there. And they talk about how, like, if it wasn't for the Usos, the New Day might not have had some of their greatest matches in WWE tag team history.
Yeah.
And they shared a really great moment, you know? And then we had Adam Cole and Britt Baker come out and the crowd erupts and they do the whole Adam Cole baby and the whole DMD thing. And, you know, Swerve Strickland comes out and people are screaming Who's House and DJ Who Kid's DJing and DJ Money. And then you get Wale and Trinity and, you know, her and Jimmy are slow dancing to the Matrimony and Wale's serenading Jade. And it's just, it's an experience because you don't imagine this stuff. And what I love about it so much is that it's individuals from WWE, AEW, Impact Wrestling, New Japan, GCW, Indies, like everybody, yo, come and hang out and rock with us because Wale watches it all. Mm. So it's like, come and hang out, vibe with us. Let's have a good time. Go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, listen to some really good music. And ultimately, like, just watch your, because you might have a chance just to kick it and catch a photo with your favorite professional wrestler.
Yeah.
And that's the atmosphere that we want. We have it loose. We have it light. Now, granted, like, the places always get nervous because we always exceed our guest limit. And like, you know, like the place was sold out, but somehow we packed in almost 3,500 people. Jeez. And the place, the occupancy was only 2,500, but like we jammed people into this place. It's crazy, but you know, we did it and it's fun and it's just, it's magical. And the two dudes that allow me to sit in a space with them and create this event every year, I'm appreciative and I love. So I love Kaz and I love Wale for always letting me have a vision with it and always allow me to have some sort of creative process. Like feeding Solo Sikoa a Dorito on stage last year, you know, because he wasn't going to speak. And then last minute, we figured, how do we break him to get him to then start talking? And I told everybody, oh, I'll just feed him a potato chip. And he pulls me aside and he goes, how you want to do this, Oos? And I'm like, well, Oos, let's do it like this. You got they're talking 25 minutes into the interview. I'll come in. I'll ask a question to them. I'll sit there. I'll put the mic in my pocket. They're answering the question. Kaz asks a follow-up. Then Shoemaker asks a follow-up. Once Shoemaker asks his follow-up, I'll start opening up the bag. I'll start eating them. I'll make you like smell the bag, do all that. And then on your cue, you let me know when you want me to feed you. Let's heighten the bit. Because WWE performers, wrestlers know when to heighten.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from an improv perspective, they know when to heighten a bit. And then he whispered, feed me a chip, Oos. And then I was like, and then the crowd erupts. I walk off stage and then they got him to talk after that, just to say what he said at the end with Cody Rhodes. And it was cool. It was great. It was a fun time. It was a dope highlight and I got a cool picture out of it. So
you definitely recommend that people go then to Philly.
If that whole little spiel that I just said wasn't a selling point for you to come and hang out at Wally Mania when we tell you when tickets are on sale, what are you doing? And there's a lot of events you can go to, but not like this. Oh, not like this.
Absolutely not like that. There's never going to be a place where you are like in a club atmosphere and you're ordering a drink and then the Good Brothers are also ordering a drink next to you and Rob Van Dam is walking by with Katie Forbes while Cameron Grimes is on stage to the moon. Like there's so much going on. It was absolutely a good time. And this interview was a great time. So
thank you.
Emilio, thank you so much for joining me. Where can our rest friends find you and that great video that you have with Big E?
YouTube. I'm on there. So you just search Emilio Sparks, yoga, Big E, whatever search engine you use. Or you just go to my X and x.com/Emilio Sparks. Click the link tree. I have a link tree now. I'm a big deal now. I'm a big to do. You know, I have links to the podcast. So you can do that. Wrestle Rap with Mighty Vin and me. You can buy the new Wrestle Rap hoodie because the hoodies are going to fund my next set of videos that I want to do in Tampa when I'm there for the Royal Rumble. Video production, especially the way that I do it, as Iridian said, it's clean and cinematic, is very expensive.
Yeah.
And I am currently semi-unemployed, so I need some monies so I could do the videos. So if you want to be so kind as to buy a hoodie, I will write a handwritten note and I will say thank you. So, because everybody that I started that trend a while ago, anybody that ever bought a piece of Wrestle Rap merch would get a handwritten thank you note from me because it's nice.
Heartwarming. Yeah.
But I write stupid things in them. Like, so I wrote, sometimes you just got to pee in a sink. Thanks for the support, Emilio Sparks. Or avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan. XOXO, Emilio Sparks. Like, I do XOXO Gossip Girl, like whatever. I just like, you know, whatever. So you'll get a nice little thank you note. But go to the X, click on everything. The video's there. And I appreciate you for allowing me to come and hang out and do all the things. And if you want to support some of the work that I do, go back and listen to the sessions with Renee Paquette. Go back and listen to Talk and Shop with the Good Brothers and Rocky Romero. And listen currently to One Up Is Life, the podcast hosted by Peter Rosenberg and DJ comedian Cypher Sounds, because I produce that. You have some ways to find some stuff.
Emilio, it was wonderful having you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Iridian, anytime I now will listen to WGN, I will think of you and I will think of this moment. I appreciate you. Thank you for letting me share this space with you.